No, I'm not for sale.
Welcome back to the Stampede Blue Colts Cast, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Matt Dainley. Thank you guys for joining me here to round out the week as we look into this matchup in week two with the Indianapolis Colts and the Arizona Cardinals. Okay, we've got a lot to kind of to think about this week. A lot of different players, some quality secondary guys, a nice, interesting front seven the Colts are going to be going up against. And, you know, they've also got some injuries and some issues on this team. So this is going to be a possibility for the Colts to show a little bit of a resurgence. Maybe the Colts will offer a little bit of fight in this one. There are some places, I think, against this Cardinals team that the Colts can exploit. But there are also, obviously, everything that we saw this past week against the Rams, we obviously know, and so does the rest of the league, that there's a lot of weaknesses on this Indianapolis Colts squad right now. So let's run through this real quick. I want to take you guys into a couple things that I'm looking at this week as we head in, okay? The Colts, we obviously know, Colts fans, everybody's so familiar with Bruce Arians. We understand his style. We understand that a lot of what he did was five and step drop with Andrew Luck, especially early in Luck's career, was able to, you know, push the ball down the field a lot. That was his idea, his scheme. If you guys remember when, you know, the other coordinators were brought in, when other people left and Arians left and all that, a lot of that changed into a West Coast type style, but Arians was famous for doing similar stuff with Ben Roethlisberger, Peyton Manning. Now he's done it with Andrew Luck, or did it with Andrew Luck, and now he's, you know, he's got Carson Palmer there, a guy that likes to go downfield as well. That's what their offense is based around. They've got some speedsters on the outside. They, you know, did have David Johnson, obviously a guy that they could trust to get out of the backfield with some receptions, a guy who can dominate a game on the ground as well. And the Colts secondary, think about this now and hang with me for a minute. I don't even know if I've mentioned this on the show yet before, but looking at downfield, okay? Now, when we go downfield, what was one thing we didn't have last week, and why didn't we have it? Against the Rams, the Colts had very little of a pass rush, right? It seemed, and from watching some guys in the past couple days, watching their pass rush, the majority of their pass rush was a delayed pass rush. It was everything to watch, the play action, everything to watch to see where, you know, the miscommunication, or not the miscommunication, but the misdirection was going to come from in the backfield, or just whatever. There was a lot of that to watch. Todd Gurley, obviously, he's a threat, you know, so they wanted to watch that. And a lot of the passes early were simple passes, were three-step drop release for Jared Goff. And a lot of this was rhythm-based and timing-based because the Colts were giving a lot of cushion, okay? The Colts weren't doing what I've talked about in the past. What I thought with this Colts linebacking core, the Colts linebacking core was quality enough to cover underneath, was going to be able to take away some of those easy short pass routes for opposing offenses and be able to allow this pass rush to kind of take hold and to get out there and prove itself. Weren't allowed to do that last week because the passing just took over so quick. The Colts had no chance to get a pass rush going. There was a couple times they forced some pressures, a couple times they got Goff off his base, and good things happened when that occurred. So this week we got a guy who has done this for his whole career. Carson Palmer looked terrible last week. Three picks, one touchdown, under 60%, well under 60% completion percentage, I think around 55, 56, and you know, they're going to be taking their shots downfield, but they're missing, you know, some receivers and some other things. They've got some pieces missing on this offense. Kerwin Williams, I think, is going to be starting in the backfield again in place of David Johnson. Their offensive line appears to be banged up and a little wishy-washy. You know, this might be the perfect opportunity for this Colts defense. Ted Monachino, Chuck Pagano, whoever else wants to freaking call a blitz to light some people up. Look, our coverage sucks right now, especially 10 to 15 yards deep downfield, right? It's not going to be great downfield further, but we've got some guys over the top in Butler and Malik Hooker who can take care of the large majority of that, I think, to help out sideline to sideline. What we need to do is completely just throw the book at this offensive line, go after Carson Palmer, Katie bar the door, get busy, and just go after him. The Colts legitimately need to blitz 35 to 40% of the time, I think. I mean, this sounds crazy, but they need to do something because they've got to show that regardless if they blitz or not, they've got some guys in place that are going to go after that quarterback. Jabal Sheard did very little last week. John Simon was in seven coverage snaps, which is about 30% of his snaps of the game, or maybe about 20, 25% of his snaps during the game, because he had no choice. They were getting those quick hitters out so quickly for a large percentage of the game, and then they would go downfield. This has to be something where the Colts don't allow that to happen. There's going to be a lot of long developing routes from the Cardinals. The Colts have to go after Carson Palmer, first and foremost. They've got to. On the other hand, the Colts secondary, they didn't press a lot last week. Okay, they pressed some. They got beat a little bit. They're just their footwork, TJ Green's especially, is kind of garbage. Malik Hooker, he was supposed to be single high actually on that Cooper Kupp touchdown. That wouldn't have necessarily kept Kupp from getting that touchdown. It was a great throw by Goff, and I don't think that Malik would have got there anyways, looking at where he started in his coverage. He wasn't going to roll that far to the right. But he was supposed to be single high. Darius Butler was to be underneath a little bit, helping with any crossing routes. There wasn't any there. And this is going to be a situation where the Colts have to be able to contain deep. They're going to use some cushion, okay? The cornerbacks lined up against wide receivers for some of you that, you know, I mean, cushion I think sounds pretty reasonable as far as self-explanatory. But the difference from where the wide receivers lined up on the outside to where the cornerback is lined up in regards to the receiver, an 8 to 10 yard cushion is about what the Colts were given a lot, 5 yards at the minimum a lot of times. And Rashad Melvin was the only one who was really doing any press other than Nate Hairston in the slot a couple times, and he got bullied. I mean, believe me, Hairston did a good job for the game, but he got bullied in that slot. He's going to have to be a physical dude and be able to take a lot of physicality to continue to play that role. But, you know, giving him credit, he did a good job, I thought. I thought Hairston did well, but this is really going to test a rookie, that's for sure. I mean, I watched a little bit of that tape, and I'm telling you, they took it to him, and he withstood it. He did well. So I'm really interested to see how the Colts attack and how the Colts will play the long game here, because they know Carson Palmer is going to take those shots. If the Colts don't get the pressure that they want to get, that's going to be trouble. The Colts are going to have to prove that Hooker and Butler can play out deep. They're going to have to prove that Rashawn Melvin, and whether it's TJ Green or Quincy Wilson, can cover deep and have the ball skills to knock a ball away. It's paramount, guys. This is if there's ever a game right now where the Colts have an opportunity to change a game with some turnovers, this is it. I mean, the Cardinals are a good team, but they, like I said, they're missing some pieces. There's some vulnerability with their offense for this defense to try to take advantage of, try to exploit some of the interior offensive line, some of the edge, as far as that goes, on their offensive line. It's kind of banged up a few of them. But there's some stuff that the Colts can do, I think. I don't know what to expect because I don't know what the Colts are going to do at quarterback. I mean, we all have to think a reasonable person, regardless of how much playbook he knows, that Jacoby Brissett is going to be the guy. I hope he is. I know that almost 99% of you hope that he is as well. This is something that the Colts truly, truly need to actually become a fact. This has to happen, right? The Colts definitely need Jacoby Brissett at quarterback. And if they don't get him at quarterback, it's going to be quite an issue. So we're going to have to hope for that. So those are a couple places that I feel like the Colts can exploit. The Colts can maybe do something with deep downfield a little bit, like I said, and maybe get that pass rush started. What I'd really like to see is I'd like to see the running game go, but this defense, this front seven with Hassan Riddick and a couple other guys, I mean, they're the real deal, guys. This is not going to be a fun group to play against as far as I'm concerned. I mean, you've got Chandler Jones. You've got a ton of guys that are just ready to go after. Buda Baker, I loved that dude in draft, and he's tough. Antoine Bethea, I mean, we're all familiar with him right now, right? He's a physical guy. He's going to come up and run support. And he's going to be average at worst in the secondary, and he's going to hit some people. So, I mean, there's a lot of things, you know, that the Colts are really going to have to do right offensively to move the ball, and I mean a lot. But defensively, regardless of what they are, I mean, the Colts did pretty well against the run last week, right? 60-some yards, 30-some carries, I believe, 31, 32, something like that, under 2 yards a carry. That's hopeful. I mean, God, guys, we've given up 150 yards without even blinking an eye on the ground. I mean, so the Colts really have to build off of that, right? But the Colts also have to prove that they can do the other parts on defense. Offense, we're limited with what we got. Hopefully T.Y. Hilton can have a big game, beat somebody over the top. Hopefully Dante Moncrief can do something. We want to see some running game. We want to see if Marlon Mack can make a couple big plays. That's what this team needs. This team needs big plays to stay in the game. And they need the defense to do the other pieces, the other parts. And if that can happen, guys, I mean, the Colts can win this game. The Colts can at least keep it close. I expect it to be within a score and a half, maybe 13 points, I think, one way or the other, going into the fourth quarter. I don't know that the Colts can do much to come back. I don't know if they're built that way. I mean, well, I'm going to say I don't think they're built that way right now. But on the other hand, if the Colts can have a lead, are we going to see prevent again from Pagano for the whole fourth quarter? I mean, God, I hope not. My podcast might just explode Monday in your ears if we have some sort of a lead and he ends up employing prevent defense. That's just something that is not going to go over well with me whatsoever. There's no doubt about that. So, guys, thanks for listening. We've got Seth Cox from Revenge of the Birds here with us, SB Nation's blog for the Arizona Cardinals. We're going to talk to him, see what he sees, both with the Arizona Cardinals and the Colts. We're going to invite him in here in just a minute. So I hope you guys will stay tuned for that. We got a quick break coming up, then we're going to hit up with Seth. So hang tight there, and we'll talk to you in just a minute. And I'd like to welcome in now Seth Cox from Revenge of the Birds, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals blog. Seth, thanks for joining me tonight, man.
Oh, no problem, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Glad to have you on. Glad to kind of run through this matchup a little bit. Not so glad, really. You know, I'm kind of just saying that as, like, you know, the nice thing to say. But this is kind of the you know, not somewhere that the Colts want to be right now. The Cardinals didn't have such a great first week of the season either. So I'm kind of anxious to get your thought process on where they're at as a team. Now David Johnson, obviously, he's going to be out for a little while. Carson Palmer didn't have a great week one, throwing only a touchdown, three picks, like 55-56% completion percentage, somewhere around there for the game. What happened to them in week one?
You could just see that there was a lot of rust offensively. They've made a point to give Carson Palmer as much time off in the preseason and training camp as possible. I think he threw like 20 combined passes in his preseason appearances, and so it was a concerted effort to give him time off to preserve his arm. He's had some, you know, in and out arm issues over the past couple seasons, and you know, it showed. It was rust. Palmer looked like he might be done. I think you have to give him the slight benefit of the doubt in that he can still play. But it definitely was not what anyone expected offensively. And then, you know, and then they lose the guy that was basically 30, I think it was something crazy, like 38% of their yardage and 41% of their touchdowns in 2016. And so now it's kind of back to, okay, can Carson Palmer win games again? And after week one, you're definitely going to say no, but as a Cardinal fan, as a you know, somebody that covers the team, you have to keep some optimism and just hope that he can find his rhythm and form again. And I don't mean to disparage your Colts, but it couldn't come at a better time to play a defense that, you know, made Jared Goff look like a good NFL quarterback.
Yeah, no, they absolutely did, and you're right. And this is kind of the thing, you know. And there's a couple interesting things here that you know, both teams, I think, at least in theory, are going to be able to take advantage of. Naturally, Carson Palmer, you think, even if he is looking old, he's going to be able to carve up this secondary right now that the Colts has been historically bad for the past few years. We've got some young rookies now on there. There's very little semblance of a pass rush at the moment. One sack last week. There was apparently 6 quarterback hits last week, and I don't remember seeing more than 2 of them. So I don't know if that's flubbing the stats or what it was, but I didn't see it. However, on the other hand, you know, last week, Matthew Stafford had a really impressive game. You guys have some young bucks on your team, too. You guys have added Antoine Bethea to the back end. What is it about the Cardinals' defense, especially in coverage right now, that's leaving them kind of vulnerable?
Well, what happened last week was, and this may just be the optimist in me, but through 3 quarters, they actually looked really good. Mm-hmm. And then the barrage came on where, Stafford is a very good quarterback. I mean, a lot of people like to make fun of him and, you know, hate on the Lions for making him the highest paid player in the NFL. But when you have a quarterback, you just hang on to them for dear life until they leave. And that was kind of what happened in the game was the Cardinals started turning the ball over. They started giving the Lions, you know, short fields and an ability to take shots, and they had a couple breakdowns. Justin Bethel is their second cornerback. For all intents and purposes, he's basically a second-year player, even though I believe he's now in year 7 of his career, might be 6. But he's been a special teams ace, and they've been trying to mold and cultivate him into a cornerback. And last year was supposed to be the year, and he had a foot injury in the offseason and never healed. And then, you know, he really just was awful last year. And so then this year, again, it was supposed to be, okay, it's Justin Bethel time. And through 3 quarters, you're like, okay, Justin Bethel doesn't look bad. And then all of a sudden, the Lions isolated him on their rookie, Kenny Golladay, who's a big target, you know, maybe a Dante Moncrief type of player.
Yeah, we know about him. He tore us up in the preseason.
It was an advantage Detroit at that point. You had them throwing the ball up, you know, in the end zone, and the biggest weakness for Bethel is absolutely his ability to find the ball in the air. So it happened, and he couldn't do it. On the second touchdown catch, I've said this all week, I think the problem was Bethea on the back end. It started up front. They didn't get a pass rush on him, on Stafford, and he was kind of able to slide right and set his feet and just throw the ball down the field. But then Bethea looked really slow getting over the top. It was one of those plays where, you know, the receiver dives fully stretched out and makes a great catch, and you go, I guess the cornerback could have been a little more on him, but that's just one of those plays where you tip your cap. Mm-hmm. The bigger concern, and I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with who plays in the Colts slot receiver position, but Tyrann Mathieu really struggled against Golden Tate last week, and to the tune of, I believe, 10 catches for over 100 yards. Mm-hmm. So it was one of those games where you're waiting to see Tyrann Mathieu be Tyrann Mathieu again. You're waiting for him to be the honey badger again, and it just never happened. He looked like a guy that, you know, probably shouldn't even be on the field at times, and so it was a struggle, and that's one of the matchups I think the Colts, you know, if they're able to, they can definitely exploit there and find a way to get Mathieu isolated and try to take advantage of him and see if he's got anything left in the tank.
Yeah, and like you said, you know, after 3 quarters, the score was 17 to what, 14 or 15? I mean, and then, you know, the Detroit rattled off, what, 20 points, and you guys had 6 in the fourth quarter. I mean, that's definitely a tale of very different results from the first 3 quarters to the final section there. But is this okay? Is this something though that is going to get in the brains of this offense and defense of this team? You know, that we had the game sold for three quarters. We go into the fourth quarter and we ultimately, I mean, you know, for lack of better words, we blow it. Is this something that's going to hold them down? It's going to anchor them down. Not only that, but with also losing David Johnson, or is this something that's going to fire them up? Now, we're very familiar, obviously, with Bruce Arians, so we know that he's a motivator. We know what kind of guy he is and how he can lead a team. Is this roster itself able to be coached up to forget about all this?
I think with Carson Palmer and Larry Fitzgerald on offense, they'll be fine in terms of mentally. The question really is physically, especially with Palmer, what does he have left in the tank? Can he make throws? You know, a buddy of mine was kind of highlighting the game today on Twitter, and there were three throws by Palmer where it was legitimately like, I don't know if this guy has anything left. And that's not to say that he doesn't, but that it begs the question. I mean, there was a throw where the receiver was open on a, you know, 12-yard dig route, and he threw it 8 yards. And, you know, it was one of those plays where you go, I don't understand how that just happened. Like, that's a throw that 90% of the time Palmer makes in his sleep. There's no defenders around him, you know, near his feet, anything like that. And he spiked the ball, and it looked like, you know, it looked like a guy like Blake Bortles. It looks like Scott Tolzien. I mean, that's who it looked like throwing the football. It did not look like a guy that was, you know, 2 years ago the runner-up in the MVP race. So I think in that sense, if they struggle, if they cannot get moving on offense again, I think there will be some doubt starting to creep in, especially along the defense, because, I mean, we've seen it in the NFL over and over again. You can have a great defense, and by, you know, game 6 or 7, they've had enough. They get tired of being the only, you know, unit that does anything week to week. And so maybe not this game, but I definitely think that could be something going through the season, that if the offense isn't able to find the rhythm and find their footing again, it could definitely come into play.
Mm-hmm. And I forgot, it's my fault. I forgot to tell you before the show that we're not allowed to mention the quarterback who started last week for the Colts, because apparently the sheer sound of his name is making people vomit, and I don't want to do that to my listeners, you know. So,
I've been waiting for the announcement on who's starting, like,
yeah,
because I follow Stampede Blue, I read the site, and I'm a closet Colts fan. My whole family's from Indianapolis, so. You know, I read the site almost daily, and especially this week, you know, I've been linking to articles and everything like that, and it's still, you know, they're both practicing. Is the art of deception really that important? Like, it's the NFL. Like,
right.
Brissett is clearly the better player. I know it was only 3 passes, but, you know, he was halfway from matching the other guy's yardage total. It was kind of a cluster for you guys last week.
Yeah, it's bad. It's bad news. I mean, and the bottom line is that the Colts obviously have to go in here and use their head. They're trading snaps apparently in practice, which makes no sense to me whatsoever. You've got to give Jacoby Brissett the lion's share of the snaps in practice, because you obviously understand that you can't send the other guy out there, not and have the players take you seriously. You know what I mean? I mean, how are you going to send that guy out there?
Exactly. The other thing is this, and you know, I've gone through this as a Cardinals fan. I mean, we've gone through the John Skelton, Kevin Cobb, Ryan Lindley. I mean, we've gone through all the debacles at quarterback over the last, you know, 10 years after Kurt Warner, before Carson Palmer came in. And that's the thing that's always perplexed me. What is giving a guy like Ryan Lindley, a guy like Tolzien, what does that do?
Mm-hmm.
Giving him more snaps. Give the other guy snaps. See if he can at least give you something different, because you already know you're going to fail
right.
with the guy as is. So what's the point of, you know, to keep this going? And so it's just one of those situations where, you know, you look at it, you guys have been extremely lucky, obviously, going from Manning to Luck, but then now all of a sudden you've had injury problems with Luck, and it's just – it's one of those situations where you're like, well, how do you plan for that? And you don't, but then, you know, and then you realize, oh, it can get worse than what I thought it could.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, the sad part about all this is that, you know, we typically, back in the Manning days, used to knock on the Colts defense a good bit because there was never that dominant, you know, group, at least not throughout the entire season and through the playoffs or anything like that. And, you know, we think about what was said from Jim Irsay, you know, when he was ultimately going to draft Luck and said, you know, we're not doing the Star Wars numbers anymore. We're going to build this monster, so to speak, as in building both sides of the ball equally to where it's a full scale team, an all around squad, you know, and the end result is that the past 5 years and a game are worse than anything that we had for at least that I can remember in the Manning era. And that's that. People don't put that into perspective. They just say, oh, the Colts have always had bad defenses. Well, I tell you what, they've got a real crappy squad in the past 5 years. Over the past 5 years, everything they've brought in has been junk for the most part. And you look at those Manning years, and if you look at Football Outsiders, DVOA, or just about anybody else that has something that you can compare and contrast styles and statistical you know, worth and stuff like that, there's nothing that compares to the crap that we've seen the past few years in Indianapolis as far as, you know, back in the Manning days. So, I mean,
right, it's one of the reasons why, and again, I mean nothing by this, but it's one of the reasons why I've harped this week that, you know, the Cardinals can show that they're still a playoff contending team. I'm not going to say a title contending team, but they can be an 8-8, 9-7. Maybe if the defense really turns it on with all the young players, 10-6 type team.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go into Indy and lose to a team that just gave up 46 points, that's starting a quarterback on 6 practices, that, you know, and you're unable to really do anything, you know, and improve on week one performance, I think in that sense, you kind of have to stick a fork in this era of the Arizona Cardinals. You probably are moving on at that point from Carson Palmer and the crew. Obviously, they're going to play out the year and they're still going to play hard, but I don't know if you can take them seriously as contenders anymore. And that's because, you know, again, as somebody that follows the Colts, you know, as closely as somebody can, another team, it's one of those situations where you just, like you said, it's as bad as it's ever been, and you expect your team that's coming in that week to take advantage of it. And if they can't, then I think the Cardinals have real concerns, and that's what it comes down to.
Oh, for sure. There's no doubt about it. There is a couple spots, though, and obviously I want your feedback on this, but I'm thinking when I look at what Bruce Arians does, what kind of a style offense he runs, what the defense in Arizona is somewhat known for, who they've brought in the offseason and everything else. Looking at that, with the Colts secondary being as torn up as they've been already in week one, kind of what we expect them to be, we assume that they're going to start TJ Green again at corner, which is an absolute unbearable to think about, to be quite honest with you at this point. But in the end, the style that the Cardinals run, a lot of downfield, a lot of long developing routes for the receivers, a lot of, you know, a very little of the dump off unless you've got the, you know, the David Johnson type guy there to swing it to. This could possibly be in the Colts' favor. And I say that because the Colts against the Rams did not have time to run a lot or to get a lot of pass rush. The Colts were unable to do it mainly because Jared Goff and, you know, Sean McVay were smart. They did what other teams have done against them in the past, and they've chopped down. They've thrown the short, you know, quick routes majority of the time, some of those crossing routes that are just over the top of the second level underneath the safeties. And they took advantage of that. And with the big thing for the Colts secondary right now, they're unable to press effectively because they're going to get beat deep. But they need a little more time to get a pass rush. They weren't able to do it because the Colts couldn't jam for nothing against the Rams. They knew it from the jump. First few couple series, they knew that they couldn't do it or they were going to get torched over the top. With Bruce Arians' offense, I'm wondering if the Colts actually have an opportunity here to unleash some of the pass rush. If they do, where should the Colts target, I should say, along this offensive line. Because the offensive line held up for the most part, only gave up one sack last week. But they're not really very high characterized, I guess, whatever you want to say. I'm losing my mind here. But they're not really highly regarded as an offensive line, are they?
No, they're not. And one of the reasons is because the interior is struggling. They've just lost their starting left tackle in DJ Humphreys. He's out for a couple of weeks with a knee sprain. So you end up coming up, you're going to see – you know, I think Jonathan Hankins and Henry Anderson can have a chance to make some hay this week. Can they take advantage of John Wetzel, who will be starting at left tackle? He was atrocious in the game against the Lions. Mike Iupati used to be an all-pro type player, and just physically it doesn't look like he has it anymore. And it's just one of those situations where, you know, you can be – upset about it, but you can't do anything about it because he doesn't have the physicality and the physical ability that he used to have. When you look at it, the other thing is, you know, who's going to try to block Jabal Sheard? Jared Veldheer is on the right side right now. He struggled last week mightily in his first start at right tackle in a real game in his entire career. He's been a left tackle his whole career. You know, the Cardinals drafted Humphreys with all the intentions of moving him over to left tackle. They did it this offseason, and, you know, unfortunately he gets hurt in the first game. But the Cardinals don't want to stunt Jared Veldheer's growth at right tackle, so they're going to leave him there. Mm-hmm. So, and he, again, he was bad in game one against the Lions. So you've got guys in Anderson and Hankins and Sheard who can, you know, probably come in and get a chance to make some hay early in the game. We'll see, you know, we'll see if Arians goes away from who he is. And we, you know, like you said, you know who he is. We know who he is. He's a guy that likes to push the ball down the field and take shots. Can they find a way to take the pressure off first before they take those shots? They're likely going to be without their, you know, best deep threat receiver in John Brown. He's been nursing a quad injury for about 6 weeks now. Just hasn't been able to get healthy. And so he hasn't practiced all week. Doesn't mean he won't play, but it's unlikely that he will play. And if he does play, I mean, he had three catches for like 12 yards last week. He's not the guy that he was or that he is, let's be honest, that he is when he's healthy. So, you know, that's the thing is, they're going to be relying on guys like J.J. Nelson, who dropped a deep ball last week that would have likely been a touchdown. They're relying on John Wetzel, who's a backup guard playing left tackle. And then Jared Veldheer is still trying to find his footing, you know, at 30 years old, starting at the right tackle spot for the first time in his life. It's a recipe for disaster if the Cardinals are intent on – you know, like you said, being who they have been before, and that's being the team that drops back, you know, seven-step drops and mm-hmm. is trying to push the ball down the field. If they come out like they did at the end of last year when they had five offensive linemen injured and were really, you know, they almost started all backups at the end of the season. I think their only starter left was their center. So they had five or four other offensive linemen in, and it ended up just being, you know, a quick passing game. It ended up being short passes, letting the receivers work afterwards, and it worked. But, you know, Arians is a guy that believes in himself and believes in his system, so he's going to go back to that. And in week one, they did, and it unfortunately didn't work. And like I said, a lot of it was timing and rust, and then a lot of it was the pressure that the Lions were able to create. And one of the things about Carson Palmer that's been true his whole career, you get him uncomfortable in the pocket, and he's not going to look like the quarterback that, you know, that we've known in Arizona.
For sure, yeah. And you know what? You kind of read my mind, because that was ultimately my next question, is does Arians give Palmer some of these quick rhythm, you know, speed throws to start the game, to take some of the pressure off of the offensive line, to get them both in a rhythm a little bit, that offense, and let it flow a little bit, and then start, you know, give them the confidence, and then start taking some shots downfield. So you read my mind, and that's something that I wonder. You know, Arians is not a stupid guy. He's going to do what he can to take you know, the pieces out of this Colts secondary and even the front seven for that matter. One more question about the offense, and then I want to switch over to the defense real quick before I get you out of here, my guy. Kerwin Williams, is he expected to start this weekend?
Yeah, I wrote about it the other day. I think what they're going to do right now is they're going to start Kerwin. They're going to give him a shot. They cut Chris Johnson for a reason. I mean, he just he didn't have any juice left in his legs during the preseason. Maybe he went and got the Kobe Bryant, you know, stem cell treatment, and he's coming back a little better. But, you know, he didn't have much juice left in the legs, and so they stuck with Kerwin. The worst happened. David Johnson got injured, and so they brought Johnson back to be kind of that veteran presence in case Kerwin flops. I went back and I looked, you know, kind of what they did in 2013 and 2014. And what they did was, it was really a three-headed attack, and really just two, but they had three running backs, you know, get the carries. And what it'll be is it'll probably be Kerwin Williams getting, you know, 14 to 16 carries in the game. You'll get Andre Ellington in there. That'll give you a different look, you know, being able to run outside and be the guy in the passing game. He'll get 8 to 10 carries, but then he'll get all of those, you know, receptions that David Johnson gets out of the backfield. And then they have a big back, 6'5", 235 pounds, that runs like he's 5'10 and 110, Elijah Penny. You know, in the final preseason game, he ran really, really hard, and he looked really good. But before that, he was averaging like 2.2 yards per carry. For a guy that's legitimately 6'5 and almost 240, you expected more. I mean, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. You expected him to be able to run through tackles, and he never did it in the preseason until that final game. And so he's going to get the, you know, 2 to 3 short yardage, maybe goal line touches at the end of, you know, in the game. But it's going to be Kerwin as the main guy, at least initially, running the football. If he's not good, you know, Arians will find somebody that will get the job done. That's something we know about him. He's not afraid to make a change outside of at quarterback.
Absolutely. So let's talk about your defense real quick. Looking at just the injury report, you know, Deion Buchanan, he's back after being, you know, limited. Or I'm sorry, he's still limited, but Carlos Dansby is back after not practicing on Wednesday. Also, you got, you know, a couple other guys that are there, especially Kim Diche. And then you look at the rest of the guys that are in that front seven for, you know, for the Cardinals. This is a very good, a very active front seven that can do a ton of damage. And do any of these injuries necessarily affect what their game plan will be as far as to attack the Colts interior and probably on the edges for that matter too, now that the Colts have LaRaven Clark starting at right tackle? How is this front seven likely to attack the Colts, especially, and we'll just go ahead and say that if Jacoby Brissett is under center?
You know, I think it is a little different with Brissett because they do have to be very cognizant of his ability to run the football. But that's something that they do, you know, every year with Russell Wilson at least twice a year. And then, you know, it gives them really good practice. And and as good as Brissett may become, you know, he's not Russell Wilson yet at maneuvering in and out of the pocket. So, and they tend to do a good job with him. So we'll see how that works out. They'll tend to usually rush their two outside guys and kind of play kind of a wall with their three interior guys. And then when they do end up bringing the inside guys, you know, they'll have either Chandler Jones or Marcus Golden not go full tilt and kind of play off just a little bit. So they play some games there. The main thing is in week one against the Lions, they really, really struggled on the interior to be able to rush the passer. They missed Calais Campbell, who had 4 sacks in his first game with the Jacksonville Jaguars. So what ended up happening was you saw less of Chandler Jones and Marcus Golden because everybody on the interior could be taken one-on-one while they could, you know, leave a tight end in to help out with whatever the edge rusher was that was playing better. Jones had 1 sack and I think 3 tackles for a loss. I mean, that's a good game for a guy, but, you know, when you're paying him nearly $15 million a year, you're expecting a little bit more. Golden struggled, I mean, in his first game without Calais Campbell there, so it'll be something to watch. The biggest thing is, do they get Kimdiche back this week? Without Kimdiche, they have no interior pass rush. It might be a lot to expect of a guy that has played, you know, like 25 snaps in his NFL career for him to be that guy. But that's what he was drafted for. That's what he's, you know, here for. He's had a calf strain that sidelined him in game one. We'll see if that hurts his explosiveness in this game. He is supposed to play in this game. I use that supposed to because, again, he's not played hardly at all in his first, you know, 18 available games to play, which is disappointing, but, you know, you just wait and be patient and hope that it turns around here. And then they were very un-Cardinal-like last week. I don't know how much you saw of, you know, the kind of after numbers, but they only blitzed on 15% of the plays after last year blitzing over 43% of the time. I don't know if that was specific to the Lions and they thought that they could win without blitzing, or if that was just a change in ideas by James Betcher. You know, they were without Deion Buchanan. They had rookie Hassan Reddick. He played about 40% of the snaps last week. He's a super athlete. I mean, he is one of the most athletic inside linebackers I have ever seen.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
When you watch him play, you can see that he's still a little hesitant. Hasn't played off the ball a ton. Still learning how to do it, and that's okay. I mean, he was still making plays everywhere. He's fantastic in coverage. That's what he does best. But they didn't ask him to blitz too much, which was kind of interesting. And so if Buchanan's back, you might see some more games played. You know, and the results of last week and how little they were able to pressure guys or bring pressure on the Lions, you probably will see some more games from last week at the, you know, request of Bruce Arians, who, as you remember, when he was kind of, you know, doing the head coaching thing there for a little bit, he likes to get after it on defense. He wants an aggressive attacking defense.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to sit back and you know, let guys run free. And so, again, that 15% was really odd when you saw it come out. And it looked like it during the game, but, you know, when you got the final numbers, you were like, wow, that's different than anything we've ever seen from this Arizona Cardinals team and this defense under Bruce Arians. That is not the norm. And so, you know, now you sit here and you wait and see, are they going to bring that aggressive downhill style back, or are they going to, you know, try to win because the Colts have a supposedly poor offensive line that they can take advantage of? Well, you know what? The Lions were supposed to as well, with Taylor Decker hurting. You know, Riley Reiff was starting at left tackle instead of right tackle. Their other right tackle was injured. I mean, it was supposed to be a disaster and 100% in favor of the Cardinals, and it didn't happen. So, you know, I think they need to get back to what's won them, you know, 41 games in four seasons, and that is being kind of that team that plays with their hair on fire, being that team that is aggressive and coming downhill. Because, again, the one thing that we know about Brissett, or if the other guy plays, with Brissett, it's going to take him a little while to get adapted to the offense. He's going to try to get the ball out quickly. So you have to beat him with pressure quickly. If you can't do that, that's when he gets in a rhythm, and that's when he's going to be able to kind of make plays. And so if you get him to move off his spot and either look to just carry the ball or, you know, try to throw the ball on the run with receivers he's probably not super comfortable with yet, in an offense that he's only had six practices in, you're gonna probably, you know, end up better than you would letting him drop back in three or five steps, hit his back foot, and throw the ball. So, you know, that's where I'm at right now. But after week one, I really don't know who this team is, the Arizona Cardinals, and I've only watched them for 32 years. So that's, you know, it's hard to say right now.
Seth, I really appreciate you joining me tonight, man. One more question before I let you get out of here. What do you see from this game? I mean, the Vegas Lions got this game at a 7.5 point underdog for the Colts. And do you see that happening? Do you see that being a little less of a blowout type? Or do you see something, you know, maybe a little different?
You know, I don't blowout seems harsh after last week by the Cardinals, but then, you know, you look at
by Vegas, it's a blowout.
You look at what the Colts did and you're like, okay, blowout makes sense. You know, I've said, I think the Cardinals win this game, but I think it's close in the fourth quarter and they're able, you know, again, I think they're able to do some things, because of their having, you know, been together for so long while the Colts are still trying to find their footing with this, a lot of new pieces in the game. I said in my answers with you guys, 31-17, and I've already stepped back from that. I'm thinking 28-20. I would not touch that 7.5 line on either side, just because in week one, you really have no idea what you're going to get out of either of these teams coming into week two.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely a coin toss at this point, although it's hard for Colts fans after seeing last week, hearing what we've heard from the coaching staff and just about anybody else that has anything to do with the team. It's really hard to take any of this seriously, and it's really kind of, you know, wearing on the fan base naturally. So, I mean, we're anxious to see, you know, a better production on the field for sure. Everybody,
and
make sure... Go ahead,
I do,
man.
Expect it, honestly. I expect it from you guys. Like, I don't think – I, you know, 46-9 sucks. It really does.
Yeah.
But if it happens this week and I don't expect it to and I'm a Cardinals fan, you know, at that point I think you have to look at just everything overall. But I think you guys come back, play better. You know, I still have you losing, but I don't think it's – out of the realm of possibility that it's a close game. And I do expect it to be, like I said, 28-20, where the Cardinals are able to pull away late, as opposed to, you know, 31-3 and the Cardinals are sitting back while the Colts are still trying to figure things out. So
yeah, I just hope that it's competitive. I truly do. I would love to see the Colts just put a solid, like I said, just a solid production on the field. That would give me a little bit of hope for the team, the roster itself. Not that everybody is so reliant on Andrew Luck. And I know that we are. We have been the past 5 years. It's no secret. But I really want to see something on this team grow, whether it's the defense, whether it's the offensive line, whether it's the backfield, the wide receivers, you know, whether they have to do something more than they typically have to do with Andrew Luck tossing them the ball, something. I want to see some growth in this team. And ultimately, that's what our head coach is going to be based on. You know, his evaluation will be based on is whether any of these guys, any of them, develop at all. So it'll be interesting to watch for sure. Best of luck this weekend. I hope you enjoy the game. Hope for no more injuries. Nobody needs to go down. We just want to see a good football game. So, like I said, Seth, thank you for joining me tonight, man. Had a good time.
Oh, no problem, Matt. Have a great time, and good luck on Sunday.
Absolutely. You guys can follow Seth on Twitter at @scoxfb. You can also check out his work at Revenge of the Birds if you guys want to catch up on something from the other side this week, and also catch his work at Draft Breakdown. Really appreciate Seth for coming on. It was great info from him. I hope that you guys enjoyed it. It was nice to get somewhat of a breakdown, you know, how he sees it. It's kind of funny that he's a little more familiar with the Colts than, you know, just the casual observer or just the, you know, the guy that's coming in here to play against his team. So that was kind of fun. That was an interesting conversation. I really enjoyed it. I hope you guys did too. Thank you guys all for listening to round out the week. I'm going to finish it up. Thank you all for the feedback, the emails, the tweets, the everything. You guys have been fantastic. Seriously, I love each and every one of you. This is great. I'm going to be at the game this Sunday, and I hope to see some of you guys there. So if you are going to be there, give me a shout. We'll meet up or whatever in the Bud Light Zone, and we'll chat it up and watch a little bit of football together. So if you guys are going out, maybe I'll see you guys there. Hope that you all have a safe weekend. Hope that the game turns out in our favor. And thank you guys for the Apple Podcast ratings and reviews. Please keep that up. Please share the show. And can't thank you guys enough for all of that. So thank you guys for listening. I'll talk to you next week right here on the Colts Cast.